Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the ACE CPT audio lectures. My name is Eddie Lester, and we are here to go over Chapter 8 from the ACE Personal Trainer Manual, 5th edition. So looking at Chapter 8, it's going to be on page 194 is where this chapter starts. And just to kind of intro you into this chapter, we mainly have we have a pretty large chapter. So it's a total of about almost 70 total pages. And although it's pretty dense with information, not a ton of test questions do come from this chapter, maybe around the 8 to 10 range. So let's go ahead and kind of get in. The main point of this chapter is to go over physiological assessments. So physiological assessments are directly referring to, we'll say, things that can be measured that are based or that are working based on your physiology. So not posture, and more about the elements that are measurable, like we'll say blood pressure, body fat. You have your we'll say respiratory or cardiorespiratory fitness levels, maybe some performance assessments like muscular fitness tests, and also some skill related assessments. But yeah, the main kind of point of this is that you are going to be using these assessments with your clients, and being good at taking them through this is going to be important for the field. So I'm really going to focus on a lot of what you will actually be using in the field with your clients, as well as pointing out what's most important to the test. So let's go ahead and get started as we look over to, we'll start actually going over at page 195, but just really the kind of introing some of the ones that we're going to be going over. So we have cardiorespiratory fitness testing, which is basically the functioning of the heart and lungs and how they provide oxygen and blood flow and nutrients to the muscles. We have body composition, that's also called anthropometry. Okay, muscular endurance, muscular strength. You have things like flexibility, and all of those are going to be we're going to be going over tests that can assess all that as we get further into this chapter. So, you can definitely learn a lot from this chapter in a sense that you want to be able to perform these assessments on your clients smoothly, and also choosing the right ones. So as we look at the bottom of page 195 at the key concept area, the main thing that I want to kind of introduce to you is the reason, well, before all of these tests, it's important to prepare the client for doing these tests. So one of the most important things is just to explain the assessment to the client. But one of the most important things, and I kind of want you to write this down on this page as it can make it onto the test, is that specifically you need to explain to the client that they may not be 100% comfortable in the middle of this assessment, and they can stop at any time. So really, you know, feeling uncomfortable is normal, and allow them to understand that if they aren't comfortable at any point, you can stop the assessment and move on, that sort of thing. So I want you to write that down and just kind of keep that in mind, that you always want to prepare the client by explaining to them basically that they might feel uncomfortable. That's a good way to intro these sort of assessments as you get going into them with your clients. So as we also look down to page 195, just that one bullet point at the bottom, it talks about angina. And specifically angina, you will need to know this, is going to be chest pain. So a lot of times you always hear that word angina, but what does it actually mean? It's basically an indicator of potentially something wrong with the heart. And how does that come? It comes through chest pain. Angina can sometimes be mistaken for something like indigestion or heartburn, that sort of thing. But angina is something that you need to be aware of during these assessments, because if somebody is having chest pain, you definitely need to stop the test and just assess, have them rest for a bit, and determine if it's something that's serious or not. So definitely highlight angina at the bottom there. And let's move over to page 196. As we kind of talk more about the risk factors, or kind of what you need to be aware of in order to make sure that you would want to stop the test immediately, and that's a drop in blood pressure, or an extreme rise in blood pressure, if it goes way up or way down, if you notice fatigue or shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, or if their skin tone gets a little, you know, we'll say pale or blue, or they become nauseous, that sort of thing, unique sweat or sweating that's not related to the activity level, like profuse sweating. And then, yeah, things like cramping, or if they just request to stop, obviously. But yeah, kind of in that area, the way that you can kind of prepare them to, we'll say, get through each assessment is just explain to them that they may feel uncomfortable. While you look for this stuff that's in that key concept, you can just explain to them that they may feel uncomfortable during this assessment. That's an important thing to prepare any client for these assessments, especially if, you know, the heart rate ones where the heart rate gets through the roof and they may not be feeling that comfortable doing it. They can stop it at any time. All right, so let's get into anthropometric measurements, specifically around body composition. So, guys, body composition is going to be the percentage of your body that is made up of, you know, different tissues. Specifically, we really care about, as fitness professionals, we care about what's called body fat, or the percentage of fat that is your weight within your body. And there's a lot of different ways to measure body fat, and we're going to kind of get into that. They intro that right in the beginning of this section here on page 196. But, you know, underwater weighing, which is also called hydrostatic weighing, air displacement plethysmography, it's called the BOD pod, bioelectrical impedance, DEXA scan, that's dual energy X-ray, absorptionmetry, okay, as well as a few other ones that we're going to be going over further into this chapter, but there's a lot of different ways you can do it. The main way that you are going to do it in the field is going to be using skin fold calipers and or something like bioelectrical impedance, but bioimpedance isn't quite as accurate unless you have the expensive machine to do it. Mainly you're going to be doing the skinfold assessment, and I like the skinfold assessment the most. That's the skinfold calipers, because you can directly measure the thickness of someone's subcutaneous fat. If it goes down, that means that they've lost fat. That's the simplest way to do it. But yeah, also you're going to be going over things like body mass index, waist to hip ratio, that can kind of assess someone's current state of we'll say overall health. All right. And yeah, they say body composition, body size measurements. That's in table 8-1 in the bottom there. We kind of went over those. That's the bioelectrical impedance, underwater weighing, whole body plethysmography. Yes, and then the skin fold measurements as well as near infrared interactants. But you won't really use any of those. We'll say ones that require a machine. You're just going to be using the skin fold assessment for the most part. Also, guys, body size measurements, things like BMI, body mass index. Maybe the circumference measurements or girth measurements, and obviously their height and their weight. So what are we looking for? And the key concept on page 197, in these assessments, specifically around body composition, once again, you're looking for lean body mass, body fat percentage. Body fat percentage can be determined by the lean body mass subtracted by the total weight of the person. That's the fat weight, in which you can create a percentage from. We'll be going over that further down, but just a little quick intro there. Also, the connective tissue, bones, blood, nervous system tissue, organs, all of that is going to make up the lean body mass or the lean weight of a person. But we just kind of consider that, to be simple, we kind of consider that like the muscular weight or lean body weight, in the sense that everything that isn't fat weight is called lean body weight. And anything that is fat is called fat mass or fat weight. So one quick fun fact I want to point out in the middle there of that key concept on page 197 is the essential body fat for males and females. So this is pretty much the lowest someone or most males and females can get as far as body fat percentage. So if you have someone that's really, really concerned with getting as lean as possible, you can kind of mention to them that the lowest possible for males, body fat percentage-wise, is in between 2 and 5%. And 2% body fat, that's nearing an unhealthy range. Most people that do end up in the 2% body fat range are, we'll say, bodybuilders or, we'll say, physique competitors, in the sense that they would be leaning out for a certain amount of time, reaching 2%, and then once they're at 2%, that's their show weight, that's their show day, and then after their show, they eat a lot of food to get their body fat back up, because it's not too healthy to hang out around 2% at all times, and it's really difficult to, which I'm sure if you have competed in fitness competitions, you would understand. But yeah, most of the time, they give a range of 2 to 5% for the leanest possible body fat, because everyone is different, so... I have gotten myself down to 5%, but I've never committed to the full all the way go down, as I've never done fitness competitions to where I've needed to be at the 2% to, we'll say, be more successful in that performance. But yeah, you know, getting myself down to 5% is definitely difficult, and I have to be very specific about my routine and nutrition and timing and exercise. And it's great to look really, really lean like that, but it's very difficult to get down there and stay down there for some people, we'll say. All right. For women, the essential body fat, meaning the minimal body fat that is healthy, is going to be around that 10 to 13%. And I would even go a little bit lower than the 10%. I've definitely seen females around the 7 to 8% during, you will say, a bodybuilding competition, but then they quickly go back up after because it's not too healthy to be that low for a female. Females do have more body fat, as that is necessary for their... we'll say hormonal production based on the, we'll say evolutionary trait that means, or that they produce children, and fat is important for developing children, as well as they have extra fatty tissue, breast tissue and things of that nature to enhance their ability to make and care for a child. So that's typically the reason why females need to have a higher body fat percentage. And so where's body fat stored? It's stored throughout the body. Different people store fat in different areas of the body based on their genetics. You may have people that store fat in their lower body, or maybe people that store fat in their upper body and or stomach. Doesn't really matter. We're typically measuring the entire body composition of the person. All right, so if somebody has high body fat percentage, they're at higher risk for disease. That's pretty much kind of what you're looking to measure when it comes to someone that might be have a lot of body fat. The higher the body fat percentage, typically the higher risk for diseases like CAD or cardiovascular disease, coronary artery disease, metabolic syndrome, maybe diabetes. Then they also get into cancers, arthritis, low back pain and death. All cause morbidity is going to be increased by having a high body fat percentage. All right, so how do you measure lean weight and fat weight? All right, let's get into that. So you want to definitely understand the difference between someone that weighs a lot that is lean and someone that weighs a lot that has a lot of fat, because there's definitely going to be, we'll say, a healthy status based on the total body fat percentage and not necessarily the total weight of the person. And that's the relationship to BMI and body composition, which we're going to get into in a little bit. But as we turn over to page 198, they're going to first on table 8-2 go over all the different methods for measuring body composition. You can kind of read a little bit more about those. I don't need to explain them too much because really the only ones that you're going to be doing potentially in a fitness setting are going to be the skin fold measurement and or the bioelectrical impedance, that first one. Bioimpedance, you really wouldn't want to rely on bioimpedance unless you have an expensive machine or scale at the gym that you work at. Some gyms have really nice machines that are in the, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 range that can be pretty dang accurate. And I've used those and they definitely are accurate within a percentage or two. But I'm still a little bit more old fashioned in the sense that I want to see someone's skinfold measurements continuously go down to prove to them that their body fat is going down. Because if you lose fat underneath the skin, you're losing fat throughout the body. Okay. But bioelectrical impedance, just to describe it a little bit, since you may use it in the field, is basically it measures the speed at which electrical signals pass through the body, in the sense that if it passes through fat, lean mass, and water in the body, and in a sense that Since it travels at different speeds, as it goes through different tissues, it can give a good idea of the total balance of tissue that you have in the body, whether that be fat or muscle or water or connective tissue, all that stuff. Yeah, that's one of the main things. If someone was to if you were to describe the assessment before you do it, as far as bioimpedance goes, you would explain to them that, you know, the signal is sent through the body, and based on their fat weight or their fat mass and their lean mass, it would travel at different speeds based on how much they have, and then you could perform that on them, and then, you know, and then it's typically a pretty quick way to measure body fat as opposed to doing the skin fold. So some people do prefer that, but I would rather see or make sure that you have a really nice machine than just like some, you know, like Omron makes a you know, handheld $40 bioimpedance thing that you just hold out with your hands in front. That's pretty dang inaccurate in my opinion. I believe it's like within accuracy within 12% either way. So, not a fan of the cheap bioimpedance ones, and even the scales that you have at your house that you step on that have the electric pulse things ready to measure your body fat percentage. Not too accurate. Haven't got a ton of accuracy. You could hop on it 1 second and it'll say, you know, 10% body fat, and the next it'll say 15% within a few minutes. So, not a fan of the cheap bioimpedance analysis machines, but the expensive ones, the $4,000 to $6,000 range. The ones that'll be at maybe the nicer gyms, or it's just somebody uses it more frequently and they have it at a specific gym. Those are accurate, and I would encourage using those. And you'll see them as you get into the field. But next is, yeah, then you have air displacement plethysmography, dual X-ray, or yeah, the DEXA scan. Not going to use underwater weighing. Probably not going to use. Sometimes they may have like the truck that drives around and does underwater weighing for people. We've had it come to our gym that I've worked at multiple times that people can test themselves. It's $50 to $100 per weighing, and you know, it's the skin fold is a little less accurate than underwater weighing, but you know, I could test it anytime I want for free, as opposed to the hydrostatic weighing. The truck has to drive around. You might see it here and there. But just as a heads up, though, the hydrostatic weighing is considered the gold standard, meaning the most accurate for measuring body fat percentage. So if you do want to highlight that, that's right in that table 8-2. Hydrostatic weighing is considered the most accurate. So definitely understand that. It's underwater weighing, hydrostatic weighing, the most accurate. But basically what it does is it measures your total weight underwater. And the theory is that fat floats and muscle and lean tissue sink. So your total weight underwater is plugged into a formula based on your weight on land to determine the total fat that you have in your body. And then MRI is next. Nobody's going to use an MRI in the fitness field to measure body fat. Near infrared interactance, not going to be used. In the field, skin fold measurements, absolutely going to be used. We're going to go over that on the next two or three pages. The skin fold calipers, in which you're going to pinch the skin and measure the thickness of that skin. Total body electrical conductivity. Not going to use that, more in research settings as well. So yeah, once again, the only two that you're really going to gain a lot of experience with might be bioimpedance and or skin fold measurements. That's what we'll focus on as we get into the next few pages. All right, so at looking over to the next few pages, I guess one thing that you would want to be aware of is if somebody is extremely, extremely overweight, you don't need to measure their body fat. Meaning you don't need to show someone that you know is going to have a high body fat percentage the fact that they have a high body fat percentage, because they are most likely aware of it. With extremely overweight people, maybe obese people, you can do girth measurements so that they can lose inches as opposed to percentage of body fat. If it's someone that's more in the, you know, overweight range, not too obese, that's when you can start to utilize the skin fold measurements and bioimpedance. Just because then they can directly track the loss of body fat without making them uncomfortable. Because we'll just say trying to use a skin fold measurement on someone that's kind of maxing out the skin fold tool's ability to open can be uncomfortable for some people. So keep that in mind. If someone's extremely overweight, you don't need to prove to them that they are overweight by telling them that they have an extremely high body composition. Use a different method for indicating that they're overweight, like BMI or growth measurements. Things like that can be a little bit better for those types of people. All right, hydrostatic weighing, it's going to go over really quick. I kind of mentioned this, but basically you're exhaling all of your air underwater. So for some people, that can be actually tough. And then they measure your weight. The error for this is going to be 0.7%, meaning it's the most accurate and not very practical unless you're at a medical facility or the truck is driving around that measures it. Keep that in mind. All right, bottom of page 199, skinfold assessments, skinfold measurements. What are you measuring in the skinfold measurement? You're measuring the subcutaneous fat, or the fat within or underneath the skin, and you're using a skinfold caliper to assess that. So they say 50% of most people's body fat is under the skin. So based on the formula that they're going to be using, and based on the thickness of the skinfolds that you have, you can estimate the total body fat of the person in a percentage form, as well as that can allow you to get the total percentage of weight that is fat, as well as the lean body mass too, through some math. The error is anywhere, they say, from about 6 to 8%, but you can minimize that by being accurate with your reproduction of each of the skinfold measurements. So let's flip over to page 200, and we're going to talk about the two different locations for males versus females as far as the skinfold assessments. I want you guys to know this definitely for the field, but also for the test, is the locations in which you take each skinfold measurement. So in males, in the three bullet points on page 200, you are measuring the chest, the thigh, and the abdomen, or the abdominal area. If you notice, figure 8-1, 8-2, and 8-3, they mark the specific area, and then they measure that 2 to 3 times to determine the total thickness of that person's skinfold. Okay, so to describe them a little bit further for you, the chest is going to be a diagonal skinfold taken between the anterior axillary line, that's the armpit, and the nipple. So halfway in between those two, you're going to draw a little X, or you can just eye it for time's sake. You wouldn't necessarily want to be, and marking on someone, you wouldn't necessarily want to do or take a measuring tape to each time that you measure someone's body or skinfold thickness. You would not want to necessarily just every single time have to measure it out, draw the X, then take it. It's a lot quicker to eye the center. And it can be just as accurate if you are very consistent with your eye measurements. But for them to be as accurate as possible, they definitely want you measuring the distance halfway between the armpit and the nipple, and then determining the halfway point, then marking it with X so that you can measure it every single time that way to create the most accuracy. But for time's sake and for confidence in your client, you know, in understanding the quickness and making it a smooth assessment process, you can eye it is kind of what I recommend. But if you want to be really accurate, you definitely can be, as that could create a little bit more accuracy through the entire assessment every time you reassess. So once again, that's the chest. The thigh is going to be a vertical skinfold taken from the front of the hip, the inguinal crease, that's where the hip flex or the hip flexes, that little crease, all the way to the top of the patella, halfway in between, dead center of the thigh. Measure that vertically. And then you have the abdominal region, which is about 2 centimeters to the right side of the belly button. All right, so those are the three that you do. Then you're going to plug it into a formula, or I'll give you a better tip for that, which would be to utilize what's called exrx.net, and you could pull it up on your smartphone as you're taking these. You could do the 3-site, which they have right here on that one, or you could do the 7-site, which I believe is a little bit more accurate. Yeah, but through that website, you type in their skinfold, and it does the math for you, so you can be really, really quick. Also, when you pull it up on your phone, it'll immediately show the body fat percentage, the lean weight, the fat weight, and the comparison to the rest of the population, their age, which is really cool. You screenshot that. You could text it or email it to the client, and that way they have it for safe storage and I'll also refer to next time that you reassess. I really like doing it that way because it gives them something very tangible to look at to see their progress as well as their current state of body fat percentage. All right, so a little longer-winded on that, but this is important because you will be doing this in the field. For women, I definitely want you to highlight this because this could be a test question, is the locations in which you take the female's body fat or skinfold measurements, triceps, thigh, and superilium. That is for women. The reason why it is separate from males is because of the breast tissue. You would not want to make a female uncomfortable by going to the chest, so they've adjusted those to the back of the arm as well as the side of the hip as opposed to right near the belly button for the female. Yeah, the thigh is the same in males and females, but the other two are different to bring more comfort to your female clients. So, once again, no highlight, the triceps, the thigh, and the superilium, definitely. The triceps is a vertical fold, okay, halfway between the armpit and the top of the elbow, top portion of the elbow. The thigh is the same as the males, and then the superilium is going to be a diagonal fold on the natural line near the iliac crest. So iliac crest is a slight diagonal angle. Just above that, an anterior, on the anterior side, not the lateral side, you're going to go right at a diagonal angle along the angle of the ilium or the top of the hip and anterior to the side of the hip and do a skinfold measurement there. Typically, what are you going to do? You're going to measure it three times and for accuracy. And typically, you're going to, average out the three readings, meaning you take the skinfold measurement, and let's say it's an 8, a 9, and a 10. You would average out those 3 millimeter readings to 9 overall. Since you got an 8, you got a 9, you got a 10, the average of those three, or add those up, divided by 3, that would be 9 total. So that's where you do it. Let's go to page 202. I'm trying to think, shouldn't need any other explanation as far as how to pinch with the skinfold measurements, as the pictures there on page 200 and 201 give you a good idea of what that is. You can also go on YouTube and they have people explaining in a little bit further detail, but and maybe a video that can help you a little bit. But as we get over to page 202, the equipment needed for the skinfold measurement protocol, I want to point out that you guys can get what's called the Slim Guide skinfold caliper for about $20 online, and maybe even cheaper. But the Slim Guide is quick, it's easy, it's cheap, and it's actually relatively similar to that of the $200 to $250 Lang or Harpenden skinfold calipers. So, it might be one or two off, but if you're measuring with the Slim Guide all the time, spring never fades or weakens, you should be getting accurate assessments and reassessments consistently. And that's what I use for the field. To measure my client's body fat is the Slim Guide. It's $20 online. You could do Slim Guide skinfold caliper. Type that in on Amazon. Type that in on Google, and you'll get a ton of good quick hits that come up. And you could purchase one very easily right through there. It'll be there in a day or two, especially if you have Amazon Prime. All right, so it's going to give you a little bit more detailed into the skinfold measurement protocol. I'll go over the things that I feel are important. So for the technique, let's say we're using the Slim Guide, you always do the assessments on the right side of the body. That is just standard. The people that created the test chose to only do the right side, so you should only do the right side, okay? Identify the skinfold locations properly by using the anatomical landmarks from the previous page. Hold the calipers in the right hand, grasp the skinfold with the left hand, thumb and index finger, use the pinch. When you grab and pinch, don't pinch too hard. And what you're going to do is you're going to grab and pinch. You're going to slightly pull the skin away from the deeper tissue. And then you're going to measure it, not all the way at the tip where the crease is, but maybe about a centimeter in next to your fingers. Obviously, don't push your fingers really hard together, as that might affect the thickness of the skin fold. Just pull the skin off of the deeper tissue, measure it, and continue. That's going to be measuring. And then it says measure to the nearest 0.5 of a millimeter. Yes, absolutely. You want to do it to the nearest 0.5. And that is, what you're going to do. You're going to measure each of the three locations, type it into either exrx.net, or you can do the math at the bottom of the page here, which is the body density calculation. And then once you have body density, then you could use that to more or less determine the body fat percentage by putting that into another formula. Or you can just go on exrx.net, type in the fitness testing body composition calculator, and you find it right there. If you guys want, definitely pull it up on your phone or computer right now. Type in exrx.net and then look for the skin fold calculator. And you could do the 7-site or the 3-site. I recommend the 7-site. And then you can it'll show you each of the locations there on that site as well. Great resource for you as a personal trainer is exrx.net for many things besides just the skin fold assessment. Yeah, a lot of good assessing tools on that site for you. You could also, they say, go to acefitness.org/PT resources to download a PDF test that you can use with your clients. But I'd highly recommend exrx.net over that. So if you paused and you're back, welcome back. Hope you liked exrx.net. If you did not, let's continue on and look at the body fat estimations for men using the Jackson and Pollock formula. There's nothing to compare it to for you guys right now. So just know that the sum of the skin folds are going to relate to total body fat percentages. And you can kind of go through there and kind of look at that. But more or less, I highly recommend not doing it on your own and doing the math on your own, because that's going to take a long time with your clients. And just typing in the exrx.net, screenshotting it, showing the person and explaining it, that was a lot better. So as we move over to page 204, you got a continuation of that chart. And as you get into page 205, I do want to point out that the table 8-5, general body fat percentage categories. So this is kind of where you can give a generalization for the types of clients that you may have and just say, for men, the essential fat, this is what we already kind of went over, the minimum needed fat for health, for men it's 2 to 5%, and for women it's 10 to 13%. Athletes typically fall in the category, or the body fat percentages for females, 14 to 20%, for males, 6 to 13%. Okay, so obviously, maybe some fat loss clients' goals will be to get into the athletic range for body fat percentage, which is 6 to 13%. And guys, athletic percent doesn't necessarily mean, you know, all sports are going to be in that range, because obviously a offensive lineman in football may have way more body fat, and he could definitely still be extremely, extremely athletic. So don't let it make you think that if someone's not in that body fat range, they aren't athletic. More that is the typical range for most, or for athletes that do a lot of different sports, we'll say. That's where they fall in, because they're continuously active and trying to improve performance. So lower body fat for most sports is beneficial. But for some sports, higher body fat percentages can mean higher success in that sport. So fitness, or just general fitness range, 14 to 17% for males, 21 to 24% for females, and so on and so forth. Obesity range, if you have higher than 25% body fat in men, you are considered obese. If you have higher than 32% body fat in females, you are considered obese. That you don't need to know that for the test, but kind of keep those categories and ranges in mind so that you can just explain to your client a little bit about, you kind of fall into that more athletic category because your body fat percentage is around that 10% for males, or maybe, 15%, 20% for females. All right. So then if you wanted to, you could do the math. Guys, there will be math on the ACE CPT exam, But don't worry, it won't be the crazy formulas like body density. Okay, they're not going to have you sit down and try to calculate the body density of this of Marcy, the 34-year-old in the do the math section on page 205. They aren't going to have you do that, so you don't need to worry about the crazy hard equations or calculations. So don't stress too much there. I'll show you the ones that they will have you do, which is on the next few pages. But yes, standard values for body fat percentage, we'll say for, you can find your, we'll say, age in male and or female and determine what the better category ranges are. For instance, if you're a 35-year-old male, 90%, you will be leaner than 90% of the population if you have a body fat percentage of 12.4 or lower. So you can find yourself in the in table 8-6 and kind of determine what body fat you are in and or want to get to. So if you want to be better than 90 or leaner than 90% of the population, find your age category and determine what that percentage is, and then use that as a goal maybe to achieve for yourself. All right, looking over, oh yeah, and then guys, as we look down at the bottom page 205, we're going to talk about further equations. The Siri equation uses body fat percentage by determining body density and putting that into the formula. You won't need to do that one either, but it's kind of the way that they used to do it before they had Excel or calculators to use online. All right, moving on to page 206. We're going to talk a little bit further. Mainly just the think it through section is kind of just talking about it takes a lot of practice to get good at the body fat percentage and to be accurate at body fat percentage. So whenever you get a chance, ask your friends, ask your family, buy a slim guide, skimfold caliper, and practice on everyone that you can. Use the 3-sight, use the 7-sight, and practice as often and as much as you can, and you'll get better and better at it. As once again, remember, any assessment when working with a client is a presentation, and you want to be as good at that presentation to them to in order to increase the likelihood of them working with you and choosing to train with you and selling them in a way. So keep that in mind. Yeah, also, they talk about that table 8-5 back there. And yeah, a lot of people want to lose weight to look good. Okay. But if they are too lean, it can be unhealthy. And just keep that in mind as, people that have a lot of high body fat percentage, you may not want to go with a body fat percentage sort of goal for them, and more just look at the, maybe the how they are girth measurements, like I kind of mentioned, or another way to assess results for them. All right, so next, the one type of math that you will probably be required to do on the test is all around body fat percentage and determining the total or the lean weight versus the fat weight. Okay, so the do the math section is what I want you to highlight and what I want you to understand at the bottom of page 206, this do the math section. You will most likely be required to do this type of math on the exam. What is it? It's a percentage-based determination of someone's weight or body fat weight and or lean mass weight, meaning, okay, so calculating someone's body fat percentage with a knowledge of weight, so basically what I'd have you guys write down is I want you to know how to calculate someone's body fat percentage when you know how much they weigh total and how much their lean weight is. So to do a quick explanation of, or to do a quick math before we get into the do the math section, let's say someone weighs 200 total pounds, and let's say that their lean weight is 150 pounds. That means 200 minus 150, their fat weight is 50 pounds. What percentage body fat do they have if their fat weight is 50 pounds and their total weight is 200 pounds? You would put that into percentage and determine that that's 25% body fat. Okay, so you may not have been following me there because I was just talking, but let's go ahead and look at the do the math section on this area right here. So for those of you that hate math, I'm sorry, but you will be required to do one or two simple type percentage equations on the actual test. So they say consider a 47-year-old man, doesn't matter. What does matter? He's 212 pounds and has a body fat percentage of 21.3%. Okay? So we know that 21.3% of his total 212 pounds is fat. That means, as you go further, that 78.7% of his weight is lean weight. So now let's determine his lean weight and his fat weight. Okay, so what do? You take 21.3% of 212 pounds to determine how much he weighs. That right there is going to be, well, actually they did it backwards. So they did, well, it says step one, take his 100% minus his body fat percentage. So this is determining his lean weight. So 78.7% of that 212 pounds is lean weight. Step two, you're going to take his body weight times the lean mass percentage. So 212 pounds times 0.78, because you got to take the percentage and make it a usable whole number. Move the decimal place two over to the left and make it 0.787. And that is 167 pounds of lean weight. Okay, and then it goes a little bit further into determining his goal or his desired body fat percentage. You don't need to know that for the test, but you can kind of go further through that and determine his goal weight by taking 100 minus the desired body fat percentage and then taking his lean weight, we'll say divided by his desired body fat percentage to determine his total weight, desired body weight. That gets a little bit too much math for a quick consultation with a client. You can do that off to the side, maybe, you know, after this session's done, you can say, oh, well, if you want to be at 14% body fat, we want you to be at 194 pounds. Yeah, that doesn't matter too much. What I'm more concerned with is losing total body fat and then proving to them that they've lost body fat. I don't care what their total weight is afterwards, unless they're in a sport that they have to be under or over a certain weight. Yeah, I'm more concerned with losing body fat percentage, losing total fat pounds. That's more important to me. All right, so that math, once again, you will be required to do. So you need to understand how to calculate lean weight, okay, by knowing someone's body fat percentage and their total weight. And also, I want you to be able to go vice versa the other way. Let's say you know someone's lean weight and you know someone's, we'll say, total weight. And then, yeah, basically you need to be able to do that, find the body fat percentage, you need to be able to find the lean weight, and you need to be able to find the total fat weight as well, okay, by knowing body fat percentage and total weight. All right, hopefully that wasn't too confusing for you there. But as we move over to page 207, we're going to talk about BMI. I'm sure you've heard of that before. It's called body mass index. Body mass index is going to be the standard for the medical institution to put a category to your weight versus your height. Guys, body mass index does not measure body composition. It's just a ratio based on how tall you are versus how much you weigh. That's it. Okay? So, yeah, body mass index, they're going to have your height in inches over your weight in pounds, or what they, yeah, this chart that they give, table 8-7, is just going to give you an idea of the total weight you are versus the height you are and the relative body mass index. I don't like the chart. I'd rather actually have you guys calculate it yourself, which I would encourage that you know how to do, which is in the do the math section on the top of page 208. So let's go ahead and go over to page 208. BMI, the formula you guys need to know for the field is going to be kilograms over meters squared. Okay, so weight divided by height squared. And most of the time, we in the U.S. do not use kilograms and meters. So what they have here in the do the math section is going to be the conversion from pounds to kilograms and from height in inches to meters. Yeah, There's also another formula. Well, to tell the truth, guys, just go on exrx.net, type in their height in inches and their weight in pounds, and then type it into the calculator, and that'll show you their BMI immediately. To tell the truth, you really don't need to do BMI too often unless it's maybe that overweight person or extremely overweight person that you just need to show them that they're in the obese category, which they probably already know. But that can be maybe a motivating factor to prove to them that they're in the obese category. So just kind of depending on how you want to approach a certain client, you can use BMI to show them that. But yeah, I do want you to understand how to do the math. This is on page 208. Just because it could potentially show up on the test, but I want you to know the conversion from weight in pounds to kilograms, which is just dividing by 2.2, and then from height in inches, we'll say multiplied by 2.54 to determine their height in centimeters. Okay, know those two conversions because you will use that in the field a good amount. The conversion to centimeters from inches and the conversion from pounds to kilograms. Not too often will you actually have to do that, but I want you guys to feel confident if anybody ever brings that up in the field that, oh yeah, how much do they weigh in kilograms? Oh, okay, well, if you want to get pounds, you multiply by 2.2. If you want to go from pounds to kilograms, you divide by 2.2. And 2.54 is the number to use from inches to centimeters. And then, guys, remember, centimeters, that's a hundredth of a meter. So in order to get from centimeters to move to meters, you'd move the decimal place over twice. Okay, that's multiply it by 100. Divide it by 100 from centimeters to get to meters. And then vice versa to go the other way. But so there's some do the math there. I do want you to know this as well, more for the field, but potentially could show up on the test. And I just want you to know those conversion rates. They wouldn't have you memorize the conversion rates and then do the math because you would kind of need a scratch paper and pencil to write all that down. And I don't believe they give you one, or at least they didn't give us any at any time we've taken the ACPT. So you will not have scratch paper to write that sort of stuff down. But they will give you a calculator. But yeah, that's a little bit too long of an equation, so they most likely won't have you do it. But I want you to know how to do it and the conversion there from pounds to kilograms and from inches to centimeters. A little long-winded. But one thing I do want you to know for sure and highlight, table 8-8 on page 208, the left-hand column, BMI reference chart. What are the categories for BMI? Those categories I want you to memorize. Underweight is under below 18.5. Normal weight is 18.5 to 24.9. Overweight is 25 to 29.9. First obesity is, or grade 1 obesity, 30 to 35. Grade 2 is 35 to 40. And grade 3 is 40 and above. Okay. You do not need to memorize the grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, but you do need to know what obesity is there, that obesity is greater than 30, and the others, the overweight, normal weight, and underweight. I want you to memorize those categories because it can and will show up on the test, as that's something that you need to know for the field, as well as the test. Yeah, like I said. All right, girth measurements are next. Hooray. Girth measurements, guys, they're basically the measuring tape circumference measurements of certain body segments, okay? Not only is girth measurements good for measuring the reduction of body fat via inches, but it's also great for measuring the growth to muscle for people looking to gain muscle. Let's say somebody wants to gain inches around their arms to gain muscular strength in their arms or to gain hypertrophy in their arms. You can measure that beginning and a month later and determine the total inches they've gained in their arms to prove to them that they've gained muscle. So the location, or yeah, guys, for the measuring tape, you can measure any location that you want, but the general ones are here on table 8-9. These are the standard description of the circumference sites and procedures. Abdomen, arm, butt or hips, widest part of the hips, calf, forearm, middle of the thigh, upper thigh, and waist, okay? Females, my female clients have loved to lose inches as far as inches off their waist, inches off their, we'll say, arms or inches off their shoulders, inches off their thighs. That can be a great way to prove to any client that they're losing body fat is by reducing the girth or circumference of certain body segments. Keep that in mind. And you can do that with anyone. But definitely, if, especially in the extremely overweight people, you want to do the girth circumference measurements over someone's skinfold measurements, as that could be a little bit more comfortable. All right, so there's a description of each of these, as well as a picture of each of these, or the bottom three on page 209. That kind of shows you the main areas in which you would measure through your measuring tape. It's up to you whether you do this girth measurement or not. Some people would be completely fine with just body fat percentage. Some people want to measure specific areas of the body. Pay attention when you are interviewing them or determining their goals and stuff. That you know, if somebody wants to gain muscle, it might be good to, let's say somebody wants to gain muscle in their legs, it might be good to measure their quad circumference to prove to them that they're gaining muscle, or their arms or their shoulders, you know, different things like that. So yeah, nothing too crazy there. I do want you to memorize the locations in which you can do the girth measurements for the test and for the field. Sometimes it can show up, but yeah, just mainly so that you guys know, like, oh, where should we do the circumference measurements? Here's a choice of about 8 different locations that you can choose from, and having those memorized and the location for those can be a good thing to do. But upper thigh is the only one that can be a little bit tricky. You want to do about, we'll say, what does it say, 4 inches from the upper hip or thigh, and or the mid thigh is about halfway between the hip and the top of the kneecap. So those areas can be great to measure and are recommended. All right, next, as we get over to page 210, we are going to do waist to hip ratio. This can be an indicator of abdominal obesity or lower body obesity, or just in general, overall potential for health risk. Meaning that someone's specific waist to hip ratio can determine their degree of risk for, we'll say, cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, and just negative health factors. So what are those waist to hip ratio norms? Page 210. And basically, it's saying, the waist to hip ratio is saying that if your stomach is wider than your hips, you are at a greater risk for, or we'll say if the ratio is high, you're at a greater risk for disease. Or specifically cardiorespiratory disease. And the ratios for males and females are right there. Males, obviously, it says 0.85, meaning that the waist is narrower than the hips at a ratio of 0.85 or less. That is excellent. Then you have good, average, and at risk. At risk is when the stomach is as wide as the hips-ish. It says 0.95. But females are at a lower, their number is lower because females typically have larger hips due to the childbearing or childbirthing needs for the hips. So that's why their numbers are a little bit different in males to females. All right, waist circumference, they talk about a little bit more, but for every inch that you are, we'll say, too large in the waist circumference, you increase your blood pressure increases typically increases by 10%, cholesterol levels increase by 8%. Those are just some generalizations. And waist circumference, page 211, table 8-11, you can kind of look at a little bit further into circumference in adults and their risk category for negative health factors, disease, things like that. So if you wanted to prove to someone that they're at increased risk for disease, you can show them their waist to hip ratio. To tell the truth, I don't do this assessment almost ever with my clients, as it's not really something that they're concerned with. They're like, hey, oh yeah, I really wanted to, you know, for my goals, I really wanted to lower my waist to hip ratio because I really don't want to be at risk for disease. No one's ever said that to me, so really not that important. Yeah. Cool. All right. So moving further down, key concept at the bottom of page 211, they're going to talk about ways that you can ensure that you, we'll say, maintain a healthy weight. Basically exercise, increase caloric expenditure. Strength training can assist. Don't eat too much. All those can assist in burning more fat and maintaining a lower waist hip ratio and a lower waist total circumference. All right, page 212. There is a potential for estimating someone's body fat based off of their circumference measurements. Okay, so you can determine someone's body density by determining their girth measurements and then plugging them in to this formula. And then once, remember from the previous equations, you can determine someone's body fat by determining their body density. You will not have to do that on the test. There's calculators for this on exrx.net, so use those if that's the way that you want to measure someone's body fat. That's about all I need to say. If you wanted to get good at the math by determining body density, you can do the math right there on page 212, but once again, you won't be required to do that on the actual test. All right. And then the final kind of area for this half of the lecture is going to be just discussing, we'll say, someone's body fat and body composition using language that's not too tough. And yeah, ways that you can do that is just basically don't overdo them with call it body fat percentage. Most people understand what a percentage is and what body fat is, so that's pretty easy. You don't need to have these acronyms, or fat free mass, LBM, FFM, FW. There's a lot of different things. Just basically explain body composition to them in simple layman's terms, in the sense that 20% of your total weight is considered fat. Most people can understand that, and don't go over their head. That's the basics behind that. So that brings us to the end of the beginning half of this chapter. We're going to take a little break before we get into the cardiorespiratory fitness testing. Let's go ahead and go to the next soundbar if you're ready now. Otherwise, I will see you in a few minutes. Take a little break, clear your head, let's refocus, and I will see you when you click on the soundbar below. Cheers.